You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
The American Angle with William Hill.
Yes, hello everyone and welcome back to William Hill's US Sports Podcast. It is playoff time in the NBA. We're looking ahead to all the series betting on this edition of the podcast and of course the all-important game ones as well across the NBA. That's going to be the main focus here. Sam Norris in the presenter's chair for this edition and rejoining me from the William Hill trading room, Stephen Back. How are you, sir?
Not bad yourself. It's a fun time of year. It's now finally begun. Got real basketball.
Yeah, great to have playoff basketball back because the end of the regular season or down the stretch gets a little bit long. There's a lot of games that are essentially played in garbage time from the first tip. Fortunately for us two, I'm a Detroit fan, you're a Miami fan, so we've at least been a little bit involved down the lane. But there are a lot of games that, certainly from a betting perspective as well, don't really whet the appetite as we come to the end of the regular season and players just being looked after ahead of the postseason.
Well, there's still plenty of interest when you're trading them, but yeah, unfortunately, when you're looking at certain lines and if you're looking at player props and stuff like that, it's very treacherous going because anyone and anyone can play, as we saw on the final night of the season with the Blazers, trotting out six guys, three of them playing 48 minutes. And then the Kings, the team they played all the starters in the first half, rested them all for, well, I could see no apparent reason in the second half. So it's just one of those things where you've got to get through the dross to get back to the good stuff.
Yes, indeed. It was at least a reasonably exciting end to the season for those teams. As I mentioned, the Detroits, the Miamis, the Charlottes at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, all fighting for the final playoff spot in the East as well, and that was all that really held the drama over the last few games, with the Pistons eventually prevailing. They had to beat the Grizzlies and the Knicks. They did so to get there, obviously over Charlotte and Miami, who were eliminated with a game to spare in the end.
Yeah, the unfortunate result, if they hadn't come back, if the Pistons had lost to the Grizzlies on their penultimate game.
And they were well down at half-time.
They were
as well.
Down by 20. If they'd lost that game, the final night of the season would have been quite spicy in terms of like what all the scenarios. But yeah, Unfortunately, when the Pistons are playing the Knicks on the last game of the season, they have to win to clinch it. It kind of was a bit of a damp squib at the end. It didn't really have enough drama, whereas all eyes were on Miami watching Dwayne Wade's last game at home. Likewise, after that, you had Dirk's last game in Dallas as well, both of which were quite emotional games and
quite
entertaining, actually, as well.
Yeah, Todd Gurley made an excellent point on Twitter saying that the NBA do that really well when they wave goodbye to stars who've been iconic players over the years. And he made the point perhaps that the NFL could do more of that, because they do put on a good show, the NBA, when we finally wave goodbye to the likes of Wade and Dirk.
Yeah, the issue you've got with that is the players who've earned that career but have also got security in it, whereas in the NFL you don't necessarily have the option of I'm going to leave now, it's you're just not back in the door.
Yes.
You're just not offered another contract. Like, the likes of Tom Brady, I reckon, will get that kind of send-off when he finally decides to call it a day. But some of them don't, unfortunately, a lot of players in the NFL don't get that opportunity, as they're not let back in the door rather than deciding to leave when they want.
That's a very fair point. Let's get stuck into some of the betting then. Start with the series betting and we'll go through the betting ahead of game one for the matches that we are priced up on. There's only a couple that we're currently missing at time recording ahead of game one. The Sixers and the Nets were not priced up for game one as of yet, and the Bucks Pistons likewise, due to a couple of key names for some of those teams potentially going to be sitting game one. But we'll start with the Sixers and the Nets. As I say, no betting at the moment on game one, but we have got series betting here. The Sixers are 1-7. The Nets are 5-1. This is obviously the 3-seed Philadelphia against the 6-seed Brooklyn in the East. And the reason why we haven't got any lines on this, it's a very big reason, because we don't know at this moment in time whether or not Joel Embiid is going to play this game for Philly, which is obviously going to have a massive impact on how this game pans out, essentially how the series pans out if he misses any extended time. I think he's missed 5 of their last 7 games and 14 of the last 24 on the run-in. The Sixers are 8-10 without Embiid this season. His participation or lack of participation is absolutely crucial, so much so that the whole series betting could hinge on that. If he misses quite a few games, there's an opportunity here for the Nets.
There is. I mean, he is the ultimate mismatch in the Eastern Conference. There's not many teams that can deal with him. I mean, Jared Allen is a nice centre, but physically he's just overpowered and outmatched. I mean, the stats for Embiid when playing the Nets this season, he averaged 30 points a game on 60% shooting. He just feasted on them. I mean, despite that, they actually managed to split the series 2-2. The Nets in the regular season against the spread, they went 3-1. So in terms of the game lines, when they come up, you've got a chance if you want to take the Nets on the plus. However, we don't know what those lines are going to be as yet. But if Embiid plays, whenever he does, effectively, I reckon if he plays four games this season, then the Sixers should prevail, to be honest, because he is the ultimate mismatch for them. But then when the Sixers have got their full lineup, their entire team is a mismatch because you've got a 6'10 point guard and a 7'1 280-pound centre, neither of which you can do much with. So if you've got all their key players fit and available, then it's a hard, hard matchup for them. But I'm guessing Boban will step into the fray for the game one and do an admirable job like he always does.
Serious prediction for this one. Tough to know where we stand with Embiid.
That's the thing. If Embiid isn't going to play any of the games, then I think the Nets could maybe steal one, maybe two. But I'd still take the Sixers. I mean, what would you think on that?
Yeah, I think the Sixers in six I will go for.
Yeah,
and I will try and read between the lines and guess. And I think Embiid might sit game one, but I think he'll be there for the...
Well, early indications what he wasn't going to be fit for this weekend. So, I think game one, possibly game two.
Yeah, but I think mean, if he misses game two, that's a golden opportunity for Brooklyn on to
steal one on the road. Exactly.
Absolutely. On to the Raptors Magic then, which is getting underway 10 o'clock Saturday night. The Raptors, of course, are the 2 seed in the East. The Magic are the 7 seed. 1-12 in the series betting for the Raptors. The Magic are 15-2. Game one, of course, taking place in Toronto on Saturday evening. And we're already priced up on this one. It's an 8.5-point spread. The Raptors giving the 8.5 points, 10-11. The Magic getting the 8.5 are at 10-11 as well. Obviously, the Raptors well fancied to come through this. They're pretty short in the betting. I have to say, the Magic are a team I've not been able to nail down for a single night all season. They are, in my mind, the toughest team to bet on this NBA season. I'm not sure I've ever got them right. When I'm with them, they lose spectacularly. When I'm against them, they come up clutch and win. They went through a little stretch of games early on in the season where they lost to, I think, the Hawks, the Cavs and the Knicks, and beat something like the Celtics, the Nuggets and might have even been the Bucks or something during a 6-game spread. And that's just, for me, that just typifies what the Magic have been this season. I think they're a really hard team to work out.
They are. It's a case of, well, somehow they split the series 2-2, which they won in Toronto. It's one of those games they do turn up on the night. It's odd. They can run hot, they can run cold. They're not, like you said, an easy team to predict. I mean, the last game of the season when they played Charlotte, I thought Charlotte will come out all guns blazing and win this because they had to win.
They needed the win, yeah.
And just the Magic ran them off the floor. It was just an easy game for them. And it's like you don't know what you're going to get out of them because they've got enough talent to win you a game. But the thing is, the difference is when they're playing the upper echelons of the East, that's when... Is that talent going to be enough? I mean, they've got the key matchup for them is going to be Vucevic versus Marc Gasol because Vuce is their centerpiece player. And what they're going to be able to do in a playoff series, because they're going to have Kawhi Leonard every game coming up against them, is going to be a tough proposition for them. I mean, they went 2-2 in the series. Against the spread, the Magic went 3-1 as well. So it could be a plus to play. It might be some close games because they do turn up. But if the Raptors turn up like they do in the big games when they've played like the Warriors twice, they beat the Warriors twice against some of the top teams. If they turn up as they should, then it should be an easy series for the Raptors. But Magic could steal a game or two, especially at home. They might, if they steal game three, it could be a chance to go 6 games. But if not, then it could be Raptors in five or possibly four if they can't get game three.
I'm going to have to give the Magic a game in this one,
yeah,
just because of what they've, how often they've surprised me this season. So I'll go for the Raptors in five. Do you think the Raptors will cover the spread on the opening night game?
I'd like to think they would. They come out with a statement and really go at it. Because the other thing as well, they're making a big buzz in America is that the series that always is maligned in America is the one that's on NBA TV, and none of these games are on NBA TV. Right. So they're they're really up for this because they're on ESPN, they're on the big networks, so they're up and they're excited. So I think they're going to come out with a statement in game one, and I reckon they'll cover.
Okay, on to the West now. This is the 1 seed versus the 8 seed in the shape of the Golden State Warriors taking on the Los Angeles Clippers. This one gets underway early Sunday morning. A 1 a.m. tip for this one. It's the most lopsided betting heap by quite some way. 1 to 250 for Golden State to win the series. 20 to 1 for the Clippers. It was really fun watching the Western Conference playoff picture pan out. We knew who the 8 teams were going to be from a little way off after the Kings fell away, but anyone down to 1 and 8, they were still vying for position right the way down the stretch. Lots of teams wanted to avoid finishing 8th because that would mean that you would be taking on the Warriors. It's the Clippers who have ended up with that burden, if you like. They've got to take on the Warriors here, and this is obviously going to be a very, very tough game for the Clippers. The Warriors perhaps haven't been at their scintillating best the whole way through the regular season, but they've still got the number one seed, and we know these guys come alive during the postseason. It's a 12.5-point spread for game one. Obviously, the Clippers getting the 12.5 is 10-11. Golden State giving the 12.5 is 10-11. As I say, through the season, there's been times where I've thought the Warriors are not quite the force they have been, but it's hard to imagine that they won't be at their brilliant best coming into the playoffs.
Exactly. I mean, they sort of, even if they don't, they're that one team, they don't have to be at their best for 48 minutes and they can still beat the Clippers 4-0.
Yeah,
they can
exactly.
still sweep them, even if they can play terrible for three quarters and then just turn it on with the last 6 minutes to go, put the ball in Steph Curry's hands and KD's hands, and they'll just make magic happen and just pull them through. I mean, in the regular season, the Warriors won 3-1. It was 2-2 against the spread, so take from that as you wish. I mean, it could be a play if you want to take the Clippers on the plus in this one, because it's a case of the Warriors haven't actually played as their all-star starting five, haven't played together, I think, for the last, I think it must have been the last half a dozen games or so in the regular season for one reason or another. Curry sat, KD sat, Clay sat. So they didn't quite have a rhythm going into the end. So you could, if it's a 12.5-point spread, then I think you could take the Clippers just to, as I was saying, they could probably hang with them for three quarters, and then the Warriors will come away as a winner, but they might just come away pulling at the end, and it could just be within a 10-point game, which will suit you if you want to take them on the plus.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. I don't mind the Clippers getting the points in this. 12.5 is a chunky enough head start, I think. Series prediction, hard to see past the sweep here.
Oh, I'd be back in the sweep all the time. Unfortunately, we don't have the odds for that at William Hill right now.
1 to 250, I think, tells the story for the Warriors. I think even the most defensive punter could stretch to backing the Warriors to sweep them in that one. On to the next one then. And we're taking a look this time at the 2 seed in the West versus the 7 seed in the West. This is a 3:30 tip early Sunday morning. And it's the Denver Nuggets taking on the San Antonio Spurs. Now, this is the second most competitive or most competitively priced matchup anyway. 5-12 for the Nuggets, 19-10 for the Spurs. The Nuggets, for me, have been just a genuine surprise package all throughout the course of the season. They obviously missed the playoffs completely last year, didn't they? They lost in overtime on the final night.
They did. It was a case of whoever won out the Timberwolves and the Nuggets got into the playoffs. But they haven't played in the playoffs, I think, 6 years. And the last team that did was Andre Iguodala when they lost to the Warriors. And then he jumped ship and joined the Warriors in the following offseason.
Well, after last season, I thought, I could see the Nuggets being a postseason team next year. But certainly not a 2 seed. And that's all been built on their incredible form in Denver.
It is, yeah. Nikola Jokic leading the charge at home in the Mile High City. And that is the key for them. If they maintain their good home form, then they could get all the way to the Western Conference Finals. And arguably, they have got the easiest road to do so. Somehow, the way all the matchups aligned in the final game of the season, they have that easier run to get there. Well, between them and the Thunder, whichever team you want to back. But we'll get onto the Thunder in a minute. But in terms of value for the series betting, if you want to take the 5, this is your best option for a home court team. 5-12 is quite a big price, I think. In terms of what the teams do They split the series 2-2 in the regular season. Every game was won at home. So if you want to take that as any measuring stick, then it might go to a seven-game series, of which the Nuggets will take them in seven.
That is exactly what I think is going to happen here. I think the Spurs will be able to make a real series of this, but I can't see how Denver drop a home game. So therefore, Denver to win in seven kind of has to be the play. I just don't see how they lose at home. They only lost seven games all regular season on home court.
San Antonio were exactly the same. They had a fantastic home court, but they are dreadful on the road.
Yeah.
Thus why they were the seven seed. I mean, when you look at the standings, they had, I think it was a top five home record this season. They were fantastic in Texas, but traveling on the road, they just couldn't muster anything. But when you look at the two teams, how they match up, they sort of, it's odd how they've matched up, because the way that Denver defends, they try to give you as the worst options as possible. So they'll always contest your threes, but force you into the corners and contest them hard, and then try and get you at the rim. But that's not really how San Antonio plays. They're not a three-point shooting team. They're a mid-range team. Mm-hmm. Try and get it inside. So how are these two teams match up? And it's all a case of how is Jokic going to play and perform in the playoffs? Because we've never seen any of these players perform in the playoffs. The only one who has is Isaiah Thomas and Paul Millsap. But they're not the players they used to be. Yep. And it's all on Jokic and Jamal Murray's hands for the most part. And how these young players are going to perform is going to be interesting.
5.5-point spread for game one. The Nuggets obviously giving the points, Spurs getting the points. I don't think that's too insurmountable of a spread for Denver. I think that's okay.
No, that's a competitive one. So yeah, punters will be interested to go either way on that. I'd probably take Nuggets by 6.5 at home. So it's a case of, I reckon you're going to have, the home team is going to be 5 in this one, however big yes. or small, of which I'd be tempted potentially even to take them to cover every game, because it's going to be competitive each matchup. Mm. So long as no one gets injured, touch wood.
Yes. I think, as I say, every team wins the home games, so I think the Nuggets prevail in 7. What about you?
I'd be tempted to take that as well. Nuggets in 7.
Then we go on to Sunday evening's matchups. We start with the Celtics against the Pacers back in the Eastern Conference this time. The Celtics are 1-6. The Pacers are priced up at 4-1 for this one. Been a bit of a funny season, really, for the Celtics. At the start of the year, I thought they would be the number one seed in the East, if I'm being honest. I thought they might make it all the way to the NBA Finals. Whether or not I'm still as confident with that prediction, I'm not just sure. They've kind of gone in fits and bursts throughout the course of the season. They had a dreadful run after the All-Star break. Kyrie doesn't exactly look happy at the moment. And if the Pacers were at full strength, I would be interested in them here to maybe upset the Celtics. But they've just struggled with one or two really high-profile injuries, which I think might stop them enough here.
Exactly. Well, arguably, if they hadn't got those injuries to Victor Oladipo, they might have even been a 3 seed.
Yeah,
quite
right.
They were up there before he got injured, but they've just lacked that star power, and they had a tough stretch down at the end of the season where they played nearly every Western Conference playoff team, every Eastern Conference playoff team, and they just stumbled down into the 5 seed now. It was 3-1 to the Celtics, but all three of those wins for the Celtics were after Oladipo went down.
Right.
It was 2-2 against the spread in those games. But it's one of those things. Marcus Smart is injured for both this series and the next series, which okay. is a key loss for the Celtics defensively, because he is sort of between him and Horford, their heartbeat defensively. He's that tough, gritty player where they just fall back on. But the key for this series and the playoffs for the Celtics now is probably going to be Gordon Hayward, because in those last half a dozen, 10 games of the regular season, he looked like he was turning a corner to getting back to the player we used to see in Utah
yep.
before that horrific ankle injury. And if you can get back to that kind of performance game in, game out, they've got a chance of getting back to the NBA Finals. I take them in this series just purely because, from a talent standpoint, they should be able to get past the Pacers, despite the fact the Pacers are a fantastic defensive team. But I just can't see, they don't have enough firepower offensively to run with the Celtics, because they've got the players that can put up points. Kyrie, if you put him on an island one-on-one in the playoffs, he can deliver. We've seen what he did in the NBA Finals for the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, I think the Celtics are a good bet. Not quick. It won't be a quick series, I don't think. There'll be a tough out, so I reckon it'll be Celtics in 6.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there'll be a couple of games as where the pace is. We've seen throughout the course of their season, their big strength has been defence. I think there'll be a couple of games, particularly on home court, where the paces make it really difficult for the Celtics.
Yeah, I reckon I see this series, it'll go home game, run with the home games, and then Celtics will probably take it on the Pacers floor in game six, I reckon.
Okay, 1-6 for the Celtics on the series betting there. 4-1 for the Pacers. Game one as well as a 7-point spread, by the way. Celtics giving the 7, 10-11. Pacers getting the 7 is 10-11. On to the closest game in terms of, or the closest series in terms of the betting anyway, which is the Portland Trailblazers taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Game one of this is Sunday night, 8:30. 23-20 for the Blazers, and the Thunder are 20-27 in the series betting. So that just shows how close this is. We had no idea where a whole clutch of these teams in the West were going to stack up. It's ended up with the Trailblazers, the 3 seed, against the Thunder as the 6 seed. And the Trailblazers will feel quite sick that they've finished third, and yet they've got Oklahoma City in the first round.
Exactly. I mean, to be fair, in terms of the Western Conference, I think everyone at the bottom was all gunning for that sixth spot, and everybody wanted the Blazers just because of how many injuries they've had. Their defensive center Nurkic is gone for this season and potentially all the next season with that horrific leg break. McCollum's been injured. He played the last couple of games, barring the last one at the end of the season. So literally, the only way that the Blazers are going to hang with them is they've just got to shoot and shoot and shoot and hit shots. They've just got to outshoot their opponents. And it's a case of, it's one of those games where, one of those series that it's odd that the underdog, the away team, is the Fav.
Yep.
You don't often see that. But stat I've heard is, in the last 20 years, there's been at least one first round upset in terms of a lower seed beating a higher seed, whether most of that being a 5 seed beating a 4. But last season, the Blazers did get swept in the first round, again being the 3 seed. That was by the Pelicans. But it's going to be a hard series. I mean, they got swept in the regular season 4-0, 4-0 against the spread for the Thunder, so they covered every time. Paul George was an absolute beast for them in that in those matchups. He averaged 38 a game. Admittedly, all of those games came before he had the shoulder injury and that slump, but he feasted on them because the problem is they didn't have anyone they could match up with him. Defensively, because obviously all the attention would go on Westbrook from the point guard, and then McCollum isn't quite big enough to guard George, and then it was, what do they do with him? Because the wings they've got, Aminu and Harkless, defensively they can do a job against him, but when he's on form, he's going to be tough to stop, and that's going to be their issue, is outside of McCollum and outside of Lillard for the Blazers, where are they going to get their offense from? Where are they going to get the points from? Because Kanter is a defensive black hole, let's say. He can't defend to save his life. So at the rim, Steven Adams is probably going to have a field day.
Yeah.
So I just can't see how you're going to get past the Blazers. Get past the Thunder to win this series. And at 20-27, you've got a good value price there.
Definitely, I think Lillard's going to have to go absolutely lights out if the Trailblazers want to be progressing here. And probably my favourite bet of the first round here, just looking at the game one prices, Oklahoma City are 5-4 on the money line. The Trailblazers are 20-29. I know they've got home court advantage, but odds against about the Thunder here in a series where I only really see Portland getting a game, maybe. I think that's quite good.
I think the Blazers could sneak a couple of games. If Damian Lillard can go off on a monster game, if he drops high 30s, 40s, maybe in a 50-piece.
Which he's going to have to, and I think the
exactly, if he does that. But then you've got other players. As daft as it sounds, if Seth Curry can turn up and go lights out, because there's been some games I've watched the Blazers this year when he has turned up and just been an instant spark plug off the bench. He may drop 15 to 20 points, but he can just give you that impetus run where, he, like his brother, he just catches fire.
Yeah, sure.
And just hits a load of threes in maybe the third quarter and just swings the momentum of the game. So I could see them maybe taking two. So I'd take the Thunder in six on this one. But I think for game one, it would be a tough matchup. They're going to get the full force of the Thunder.
Yes.
So I'd take the Thunder. And you're saying 5-4 on the money line. Yeah. That's a very good price. That'd be the play.
I do like that. I think I'll probably go Thunder in five. I'll be a little bit more and bold with that game. Still got a couple of more matchups to assess. We've got the game coming up between the 1 and the 8 seed in the East, which is the Milwaukee Bucks taking on the Detroit Pistons. This one is getting underway sort of midnight Sunday going into to Monday morning. 1-50 for the Bucks here, 16-1 for the Pistons. This is another game where we don't have the lines as of yet for game number one. And that's because, much like Joel Embiid, we don't know whether Blake Griffin is going to be taking part here for the Pistons. He's missed quite a few games down the stretch for them. It's perhaps not as big a team news as Embiid would be for the Sixers, because we'd still fancy the Bucks to get past the Pistons, even if Griffin is there. But Griffin will obviously be a big asset to the Pistons, who crept into the playoffs on the final night of the season, having gone from looking at one stage like they were going to be probably a six seed and looking kind of assured. They went on a little bit of a poor run and only just clung on in the end from Charlotte and Miami, who were both finishing well. They take on the Bucks, who were the best team in the NBA in the regular season. We said on this podcast throughout the course of the year, the only problem with the Bucks is lack of playoff experience. A lot of these guys haven't been to the postseason before, but this really is a matchup that I can't imagine them having too much trouble with.
It's not a case of they haven't been to the playoffs, they've never won in the playoffs.
Yes,
that's
sure,
the issue.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Like Giannis has played in the playoffs before, but they've got a few pieces now that have got a bit more experience. I mean, all of them have been thereabouts. Brook Lopez has been in the playoffs as well. They've got that veteran experience in the background of Pau Gasol, who has some rings. But I mean, if Blake Griffin doesn't play, the problem with the Pistons is offensively, it is just a horrific watch for them without Blake Griffin, because he is the focal point of their offense. He gets everyone involved. He's, you as hard as it is to believe, their best three-point shooter. When you think when he came into the league, what was it, 10 years ago now, he was just a dunking machine, whereas now he is an all-round offensive package. And without the without him on the Pistons, you can't look anything past a sweep, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that's why they faltered so badly at the end of the season, because Griffin missed so much time with a sore left knee, which was amazing to think it took him 70 games. Given his track record, it took him till game 70 of the season to miss a game through injury.
Yeah, which is incredible.
Which is incredible for him. But if he's not going to be fit for any of this series, it's going to be a sweep without, because they've got no one that can, one, they've got no one that can guard Giannis, which is the big mismatch in the East. Who, what are you going to do with him? But then outside of that, they've got no one else that can really score. I mean, Drummond's been having to put up monster numbers, of which, if you look interested in player props, the last game of the season, his player lines were, I think it was 19.5 and 17.5, which are ridiculous numbers. But when it comes to playoffs, they're not going to really translate to a win for them.
It's a great point you make about Blake Griffin. Against the Thunder a few nights ago, he made 9 threes, which was as many as he made in his first two seasons in the NBA. And he made them in one night,
exactly.
Which just showed the transformation.
I mean, when you watch some of the moves that he makes now, the fluidity in his game and the shooting stroke, it's amazing to how far he's come. And it's probably how he's probably going to survive. Unfortunately, well, hopefully the injuries don't mount up too badly, but how he'll survive through this mega contract of his, because of how well he's transitioned his game from that just pure athlete and raw power to a more of a finesse game where he's able to get teammates involved, shoot the three. I mean, the stat that really amazed me was he's third in the NBA in step-back threes behind James Harden and Luka Doncic.
Okay, blindly.
Exactly. It's not a stat you would have thought he'd be anywhere near, even a few years ago.
Yeah. Bucks to sweep then?
Yeah. If Blake plays, then maybe they'll get a game at home, but the Bucks to sweep would be a good play.
The final game of the first round then is an interesting one. This is the Rockets taking on the Jazz. Obviously, fourth and fifth in the West here. The Rockets are 2-7. The Jazz are 11-4. This could be quite an interesting clash of styles for this one, because the Jazz, as we know, are a pretty rock-solid defensive unit. A lot of their success comes from being good on the defensive front. And the Rockets have been, obviously, it's all been about James Harden for the vast majority of the season. And he's led them offensively. They've got the likes of Chris Paul in there as well, who is, I was going to say, a supporting role. That's a little bit unkind to CP3. But it has been all about Harden this year. And we know how the Rockets are going to approach the game. We know how the Jazz are going to approach the game. I think it could be a case of which style of basketball wins out over the course of this series.
It is. I mean, if you fancy an upset, then the Jazz at 11-4 for the series is a good price, because it is literally going to be a case of it's all going to fall on Harden's shoulders again, because it's almost going to be that idea of, well, are we just going to let him get his and no one else get theirs?
Yep.
Which is what teams used to do with the Phoenix Suns years ago when you had Steve Nash playing, because if he can get everyone else involved, that's when the problem starts. But if you're going to let Harden average, say, 40 points a game, but they lose every game, then you'll live with that.
Mm.
If he wants to put his numbers up and then no one else can provide anything on the team, then that's what they're going to have to do. But in terms of defensively, it will be an interesting series. I think this one could be a six or probably a seven game series, if you ask me, because I reckon the Jazz are good at home, but it's just how well they can close games, the Rockets. I mean, they blew that game in Oklahoma City the other night, which is one of the reasons why we've got the matchups as we have, to think they had, what was it, I think 12-point lead in the fourth quarter, and then they lost it at the buzzer. But it's one of those where it was 2-2 in the regular series. The Jazz went 2-1-1, so you had one push in the against the spread. So I'd be tempted to take the Jazz. I mean, what's the opening line for this, for game one?
So for game one of this Rockets Jazz matchup is 6.5.
So 6.5 to the Rockets. Mm. On home floor, I might be tempted to take that one. Just because James Harden is going to, because of all the failures he's had in the playoffs. I mean, he's been to the NBA Finals, but that was as a bench player with the Thunder. With the team on his back, he hasn't lived up to the expectations, arguably. I mean, barring last season where they got to Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals, he hasn't got it done as the focal point of a team in the playoffs. So he's going to want to make a statement. So I reckon the Rockets will cover in Game 1. But going forward, I think it's going to be a seven-game series, to be honest.
I do as well, and I think there'll be an upset here. I take the Jazz in seven. Ooh. I think if they can bury Harden for a night or two, and it's going to take a good defensive team to do it, which the Jazz are, then I think there's a real, real chance for them. And they're arguably a more complete, well-rounded unit, the Jazz, and have different options, different gears to their game. So I think there'll be an upset in this.
I think the advantage they've got is, I think defensively, they've also obviously got Gobert in the middle that's going to disrupt everything. But yeah, on the wings, they've got the ability, they've got the players to switch out on Harden and not be left at a massive disadvantage. So ironically, I think the player who guarded him the most in the regular season was actually Ricky Rubio.
Right, okay.
But then you've got Joe Ingles, you've got Jay Crowder, you've got Donovan Mitchell, who's a good defender. So they've got enough players whereby there isn't a horrific mismatch somewhere on the perimeter for him to exploit like he has most teams. So I reckon it could be a play if you're taking them on Game 7 on the Rockets' floor.
Yeah, and 11-4 they are to win the series betting. Stephen, I was excited for the playoffs before we sat down. After this half an hour, I'm really, really excited. Can't wait for it to get underway. Are there any standout plays for you on either in the series?
William Hill Racing Radio is now available on your smart speaker. Just tell it to play Racing Radio via TuneIn and leave the rest to us. William Hill Racing Radio. It's everything to give you the inside track.